understood how young country kids do want to go to university and just how much difficult it is when they're trying to work a casual job to pay their way. They're trying to do their own washing, trying to do their own shopping to make their own meals compared to the person they might be sitting next to in class who's got the clothes on that their mum's washed for them and their lunch was done. And, like, they don't have to have any of that other responsibility. They're just there to study. It's almost like a continuation of high school. And for country kids, it's so different to that. So I was just mad keen on making that study path more accessible and more well thought out and more supported along the way. So that just spoke volumes to me. And when they...
Welcome to Convos, Stories That Connect, the Lifestyle Barrington Coast podcast where we dive into the heart of what makes this region so special. Through candid and inspiring conversations, we explore what draws people to this breathtaking part of the Mid-North Coast and what keeps them coming back. Our guests share their personal journeys, challenges and passions, offering a glimpse into the vibrant lifestyles that shape the Barrington Coast.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Convos, Stories That Connect. I'm Megan Lewis, and I'm the host, your host today. Stories That Connect, the Convos podcast, is a podcast that looks to explore the heart of the Barrington Coast on the Mid-North Coast through authentic conversations. And I'm so excited about today's guest because I don't know if there could be anybody more authentic to have a conversation with than my delightful guest, Donna Ballard, who's the CEO of Taree University's campus, festival coordinator for Wingham Music Festival, and a passionate advocate for regional education and the community. Donna, welcome.
Thank you, Megan. It's such a pleasure to be talking to you. I'm thrilled to have been invited to the convo.
Yes, we've had a lot of convos over the years we've known each other, so yes. This is possibly our most formal one. Yes. let's go back to the beginning, if I can. I know that you have deep roots. I think you're born and bred originally from Moorland, now live in Wingham. What was it like growing up in this part of the world when you were a wee slip of a lass?
A wee slip of a lass. I guess I grew up on a farm. So for me, mm-hmm. I was always outdoors. Like, my dad would build me cubby houses, and they were not fancy cubby houses. They were made out of the tarp off the, you know, that had just covered the cow meal or whatever, or made out of meal bags. They were just whatever we had lying around. So I was always outside, and maybe that was intentional to keep me away from mum, who was trying to get things done. But I was very much outdoors, and my dogs were everything, and we grew vegetables, and we used to bag them up, and we'd take them to the town head markets, and I would get the money for that. So that was probably when I was in about fifth class, I'd say. And I'm the youngest. I have much older brother and sister who both really had left home by the time I was about eight. But they used to laugh at me because when I got the money from the town head markets, I used to iron my money. because I had to be able to stack it neatly because I was never going to spend it. You know, so I was saving my money, so I'd iron it so I could stack it. Yeah.
Do you remember what you were saving for as a young girl?
Before it got too serious, I was actually saving to be able to go on the rides at the aquatic festival that was on in Taree every January.
I love it. I remember saving up when I used to work at Beecroft News Agency, and I think I got paid $4 an hour, and I was saving up to get my own sound system. And, you know, this big silver thing that two cassette players and all that. And I just loved it. It was just so proud of it. It was interesting, isn't it? Those things those memories.
I actually think that's a big sound system is one of the things that I bought when I got my first actual proper paid job.
Yeah.
I remember going to Newcastle to buy the sound system because my brother lived down there. And that was a big purchase.
Yeah, well, music runs deep, so we'll circle back to that one. So you're growing up on the farm. Was it more of a hustle bustle back then when we did have more farms, more dairy? You know, what was the tempo like as a community?
We lived at Coralville, which was really quite remote. It's on the road to Diamond Head, so there wasn't much hustle bustle, that's for sure. But I guess I remember my mum was always helping out with community things. Like when we did the travel to school every morning, she'd be picking up every other little kid that lived along the road so that that was shared. You know, there was always different people doing the school run. And she'd be helping out on the PNC, and she'd be, they were always helping out with church staff, cooking for fates, and they were always on the fundraising trail of trying to get more money, I guess, for whatever things they were working on. But I was very disconnected. I never paid much attention to what they were doing. I was just always doing my thing. And
it's interesting, though, because when we go a bit further into our conversation, we'll see how far that apple's fallen from the tree in terms of community and seeking funds, right? you moved into study, and you studied at Charles Sturt and at the University of New England. Is that correct?
That's correct, yes.
Yeah. So what led you to want to go down to that path of education and further education for you?
Oh, wow. Well, that came out much later in my case because I did really well at school, and I didn't realise I was doing well at school because I didn't place enough attention on it, I guess. I remember sitting with some of the kids that I sat with up until about year nine, until I moved to a different group, and they were kind of paying me out for caring so much about what my books looked like and how intent I was on learning maths and all that stuff. And I just loved that stuff. Like how I operated. So I got a very good mark in my HSC, and I and my brother, who I had mentioned, he's 12 years older, he'd gone on to Newcastle Uni. So my parents had seen that was a natural path for him, but they didn't see that as a natural path for me. And I got accepted into Macquarie University. And I remember finding the letter when I was cleaning up stuff when my mum had passed away. And, you know, that was not ever made any big deal of. Like, I hadn't even remembered that till I found that letter. And I was like,
oh, wow.
Wow, if I had actually been encouraged a little bit more and gone, this is a really good offer, you can go and do this, you know.
Sure.
But it just wasn't on the wavelength. And I just really wanted to start earning money of my own and live my own independent life. And, yeah, going to uni was going to delay that. I wouldn't have any money. So my intention was to take a gap year after year 12. And I had lined up, I was thinking architecture might be my thing. Who knows why? Like, maybe.
Yeah, I wanted to be a vet, but I hate blood, so I don't know what I was thinking there.
I could build tubby houses out of tarps. I could do anything. Yeah. I loved Lego, you know. I was always building mansions with Lego when I was little. I was like, yes, I'll be an architect. No thought behind that at all.
Yeah.
But I had been given a job at what was called the Building Information Centre in Taree. And I'd received that at the end of year 12, and I was like, great, I'm going to work there for a year. That'll set me up in that building industry, and then I'll go and do architecture. And I rocked up for my first day, because back then there were no emails. You didn't really even have a lot of phone conversation because it was the one phone in the house that everybody owned. So there was no direct personal contact with anyone. So my mum dropped me in for what was going to be my first day at the Building Information Centre in January. And I spoke to the lady director who had given me the job, and she said, oh, I'm really sorry, Donna, but my partner here has put on another person in the job that we were going to be giving to you. Oh. They're starting today as well. But, you know, across the road here is Taree Photographics. How about I walk you over and see if Alan Small needs anyone to work behind the counter or something? So that's what happened.
Wow.
So when I landed there, sure, I did a bit of retail stuff on the counter, but the guy that was helping out there needed help in accounting with wages and all that. So I fell into that. And then I fell into that. I thought I might as well start doing TAFE and learn a bit about accounting and started doing TAFE. And then about halfway through that year, I met my husband, Kevin, who is still my husband, and we got married the next year. So the whole gap year thing, that pronounced my uni thoughts for quite a while.
And were you conscious of that? Like when you were studying at TAFE, were you, like maybe I missed it, that did you know that you'd been offered the opportunity at Macquarie Uni, or did that sort of not even get put on the table to you? You don't recall it?
I don't recall it. Like, I just wonder whether that mail, you know, that letter went to my parents and they might have quickly talked about it, or I just don't remember any discussion around that. Hey, this is a great offer. You should take this offer up.
Right.
There was, I don't think they knew how to handle that because they hadn't been university people. They knew they didn't have the money to be able to afford for me to go away. So I guess it just disappeared real quick because they couldn't make it.
Sure. But yeah. Interesting there that what I heard from you is that then there was that sort of opportunistic, but in a good way, strategic kind of, you know, consideration of looking at what you might want to do or take advantage of the opportunities put before you. But education was always still a part of that. Like it wasn't like, you know, I'm happy to do the job and just keep learning on the job. I wanted to take it a little bit further and continue to sort of almost push yourself. Was that a career thing, or was that more like I want to better understand what I'm doing?
I think I always have that responsibility that if they're trusting me to do the accounts, well, I better know what I'm doing. Like I'm not going to
good point.
I'm not going to bluff it. And they've given me an opportunity, so I need to make the most of that opportunity. And I think maybe that's the common thread. Like with whatever I get in front of me, I'm going to try to extend on that or push on that or go a bit bigger than what you thought was, you know, I guess I'm just always following a lead to something because something's got to lead to something. If I just push a bit harder, I'll get something, you know?
Yeah, I love it. I often think of that as like a person who sits on the front of their seat rather than sitting on the back of the seat. You know, like they're always, you know, looking for where that could take them rather than so like, I'm just going to coast along.
I had the Tuesday off after Easter, which was meant to be a coasting day, and it drove me nuts. I was like,
talking of work, you're currently CEO of Tara University's campus. What was the attraction there for the role? Because that's a big, really big, bold, you know, I guess, aspiration for Tari.
Yeah, and I felt a lot of responsibility with being granted that opportunity to be the CEO. For me, I could totally relate to that role because I've just spoken about how difficult it was for me to make that transition from year 12 to go to the city. It just didn't happen for me. So then I decided to study later in life, actually when my own, my son and daughter were starting to think about their future careers, early high school. I was like, well, maybe I should think about university. Maybe I can do university online. And I had a friend who was doing teaching online. And I thought, well, they're doing it. I'll give it a go. So that all happened much later for me. So I understood that online component of study and how, especially as a mid-30-year-old taking that up, you can't leave your house, the routine of your job, your kids to go away and study. You have to do it online. In fact, I was choosing every course that didn't have a residential option because I just could not go away. And that's why I fell into whatever shape my accounting degree took. Like I ended up with marketing and management because I didn't need any online residentials for those. And then when my son and daughter were finishing high school, one went to Coffs Harbour because that was closest and she didn't like city life so much and chose Coffs. And my son went to Newcastle because my sister happened to be there by then and he had somewhere to stay. So I got that whole difficulty of making that transition to university and I understood how young country kids do want to go to university and just how much difficult it is when they're trying to work a casual job to pay their way, they're trying to do their own washing, trying to do their own shopping to make their own meals compared to the person they might be sitting next to in class who's got the clothes on that their mum's washed for them and their lunch was done. And like they don't have to have any of that other responsibility. They're just there to study. It's almost like a continuation of high school. And for country kids, it's so different to that. So I was just mad keen on making that study path more accessible and more well thought out and more supported along the way. So that just spoke volumes to me. And when they were first talking about a university in Taree, like back when they were first scouting for money and setting up the the guiding mentors that made it possible, I was like eagerly watching on and kind of got to know people that were in that role of putting it all together so that I could stay informed. And I was like, make sure you tell me when that job comes up, like this is what I want. Like I was even planning my own the work I had at the time. I kind of allowed that to come to an end and then just took a 12-month role because I thought that job's going to come up in that time. So I was really, really, really wanting that job.
Well, it was yours to start from. That wasn't it. You'd claimed it.
not really, because I don't come from a university background.
Yeah.
And I know that they had lots of people applying that did have that background, and that's obviously something that I was lacking in. So, you know, I was pleased that they saw my connections to local community as the strength rather than my connections to university. So, yeah.
And that's were you apprehensive at all?
About applying or about?
Well, let's say when you got the job, like, you know.
I was madly excited.
You're just excited. Okay. No room for apprehension there. Let's crack on with it. I love it.
Totally excited. But I just remember, like, when I first came in, I was just in an office next to Graham Brown's because we didn't have a space to operate out. There was just nothing. Like, it was literally, oh, we've got to get a PO box. Oh, we haven't got a phone number. Oh, we better set up email addresses. Like, it was really starting from scratch. Like, there was nothing.
Wow. And where we're at now, I mean, you've moved to the new premise just over a year or so ago now. It's a beautiful space. It's 1 Pulteney Street. Is that correct or is it 2? I've gotten confused.
It's number
now.
2. We've moved to number two.
That's right, number 2. Yeah. I should know that. What was the old council building from Taree Council days?
Yeah.
Which is, you know, like it's such a strong statement now, and I love all the signage that's around it. It looks like you really, you know, you've really settled in and you're fitting the clothes, you're fitting the building now.
Yeah.
How's it feel for you and the team?
I feel like sometimes you feel like you haven't done as much as you could do, but then you start to think this has only been 5 years, which in itself sounds like a long time too. But so September 25, I will have been 5 years in this role. So I guess I've been in 4.5 years. And we've done a lot in that time. Like we've brought on extra staff. We've made really strong connections into the schools and with our university partners and with employers in the area. I think more of them are now knowing who we are. Like there's been, some really big steps and big achievements. But I must admit, you don't really often sit back and look at those because I'm always thinking about, well, what's next and what do we do next? Like how do we do more with what we've got? And
That Donna trait of making the most out of every opportunity.
Squeezing every bit out.
That's right. A farmer's daughter. A farmer's daughter for sure. I want to take on a little tour just a little bit just onto the other part or other, you know, whether it's a half of your life or whatever percentage of your life takes the festivals and community part of it, because that's also such a big part of your life. The what is now the Wingham Music Festival was the acoustic festival. I was actually in the choir at the sang at the first acoustic festival. So, you know, I do have I've got a little bit of a sort of a connection there through that. But and I've heard that you've said that festivals are a way of life. Mm. What is it about festivals for you that resonates so deeply, other than having your own boombox? But what is it about them that's for you and the broader community? Start with you first.
For me, festivals bring happiness. Okay. And I think we can spend so much time in I guess I've had some jobs where it's been a bit of a grind, you know, where things haven't been as fabulous as being at the university is because it's been incredible. But, you know, some of my previous jobs have been grinding jobs where you really had to push hard every day and there wasn't lots of opportunities to be reaching for. All those opportunities had kind of been spent to some extent. So it was more difficult jobs. And I really liked the idea of being able to throw my energy at night into something that was going to take my attention firstly away from my day job. So I'd go home and be totally consumed in something else that I could see really good outcomes from. So it was really inspiring for me to be able to create something like that. We started from nothing, just some conversations with some people that were interested. So it's, to me, it's about bringing happiness into the community. Like, how can you not want to do that?
With the Wingham Festival, it is a very loved event. And I was talking to a neighbour of mine who's just been up to the Blues Fest. And he said, oh, it was great. Music was great, but way too busy. Not ever doing that again. I said, you've got to check out the Wingham one. Like, you don't have to travel to Byron; you can go to Wigan. You know, they took their camper van trailer kind of thing with them. He's like, oh, really? I said, it's a great festival. So what is it that you think that because the community seems to really embrace it and love it and own it. What is it about the Wigan Festival you think that gives it that special?
I don't know. I think we've probably got to backtrack to why it feels that way. My husband's a musician, wanted to get something happening, and he connected with two other people in town. One was tourism related and one was around bringing in extra people to shop in the shops in the town. So it was kind of you're thinking about that. It really had that cultural element for my husband, the social aspect for tourism, and the economic impact for the shop owner. It's always had those three dimensions working together. It's never been just about making the money. It's never been all about the tourists. We want to develop the community as we go. And I always feel like we're weaving these threads of, threads of opportunity, and weaving that all together and seeing what we end up with in this amazing woven product at the end every year. Mm-hmm. And I think that's why it has that community feel, because we're not like, say, a Red Hot Summer Tour where we get all these bands, they blow in, set up for the day, and then they disappear, and it's kind of like here and gone in an instant. Like, we're building with the community all the way through the year. They help us immensely in being volunteers and performers on stage, and there's no way we could do it without that community support. Yeah. But more than support, their effort and their drive to make it happen. Like, that's why it's got that feel, because it can't be anything else.
It's like if you've ever wanted to be a roadie, well, then, here's your chance. If you've ever wanted to bump in and bump out, or, hang out with rock stars, then, it makes it very accessible.
Yeah, it's like, we do try to give lots of different, I guess, like, little career opportunities. You want to set up a stall and sell some stuff, come and do it. You want to be on stage, well, come and be a busker and see how it feels. Or, you want to, there's lots of, you can imagine all the different roles that go into an event, and we try to tie an opportunity around all of that. And we've been working the last few years with the Smith family, where we have students from Wingham High School come in over a couple of days and watch it get built from the ground up, and then they get a volunteer pass to come in across the weekend, and they begin to see it from literally the grassroots of the showground, and then experience, 10 o'clock on Saturday night where the lights are going off and the bands are jumping around and people are loving it. Like, it's been building the relationships with those kids, those students, has been incredible as well. So I love that.
Is there something in particular? I mean, you could point to the number of bands that have played, the amount of money it's raised, number of tourists, but is there a part for you when you look on the history of Wingham Festival that you're particularly proud of, that you think that's the sort of contribution that really makes my heart sing?
The biggest thing for me, it always comes out of a really stressful thing, doesn't it? It's usually like the highs and the lows. So there was like this incredible stress the year after COVID. So it must have been the 2023 year, or maybe 2022. 2023, I think. And I had to go, because I just, my job here at the uni was getting bigger, and I had to go away to Adelaide for a conference so that I could get the right connections and learn more about the Regional University Study Hub and all of that. And, of course, the week of the conference was the week leading into the festival. And there's no way
that
I couldn't go to the conference. Anyway, so for me to not be part of that and to be checking in every night with people and seeing how they're going and trying to organise stuff, when I came back on the Friday morning, we opened on the Friday night, what the team had put together I was beyond amazed, because it was the first year we had the big super tent. It was our biggest festival year so far. And what they'd pulled together through incredible hours and incredible stress, but also using their amazing connections and their knowledge, was brilliant. So for me, that year was the absolute highlight. And there were just so many things.
Yeah.
When I came back on the flight from Adelaide, I put my keys in my suitcase, because, I was trying to keep everything really neat, and I'd left at 3 a.m. to catch the flight from the Barossa to Adelaide back to Sydney. When I did the connecting flight up to here, my suitcase didn't arrive, so I didn't have my keys. So someone had to come back from the Port Macquarie Airport. On the way back, we're dodging in and out of reception as you do, and the guy that looked after the liquor license was like, Donna, the liquor license is not through. You've got to get onto someone at council. our festival always falls on the public holiday of Mid-Coast Council, which is the Friday before our, it's the third Friday in October, which is always their public holiday. So I was trying to get someone at council on a public holiday. Craziness, but so that year was the ultimate, the penultimate. Yeah.
That's amazing. What an achievement. Mm-hmm. And I love those because they go down in legacy, like they become the story, they're the history. Remember that year? Remember that part that happened? And again, it's that real community participation. What makes it special. What goes on behind the scenes that people might find interesting at the festival? How many portaloos you've got? Okay, how many hot dogs you sell?
There's just so much minute detail about everything. I'm like, oh, God. But, well, I mean, one thing that was amazing one year, we had someone fly in from Ohio.
Oh, wow.
Because they were fans of Mitch King and they were listening to him on Spotify or whatever, and it shows you the next gig that person is playing.
Right.
And when they looked, it was Wingham, and he happened to be at Qantas Pilot or something, and he went, that's it, we're going to Wingham. So when they had been contacting us, I thought someone was playing a joke. Like I thought, because he was saying, oh, I don't know, it's going to take me 13 hours to get there, all this stuff. And I was like, oh, sure. But when he actually came and checked in, I actually scanned him in at the gate, and I was like, I can't believe this is really.
That's a great story.
That was amazing. And so, of course, they got backstage and got to meet Mitch King, which for them that would never happen at a kind of bigger normal festival. But we were able to make that happen. And,
I'm curious about that. How do you pick the artists, and then how do you book them? Like how do you get? I think I went to one when the Eurogliders were playing, and that was fantastic. Like, tell us a little bit about what that process looks like.
Yeah, that starts, depends on the artist. It can start the whole year before. It can sometimes take you 2 years to be able to line up a date when they're available as well. And, of course, it was very messy during COVID. Mm. And we try to approach it, we start with a spreadsheet, of course, Megan.
Of course.
One third of the local performers, the buskers and the choirs and all the people that have always been there that we love, and it's interesting for tourists because that's a different angle. So there's that. And then we have the other one third are people that we love, like people we're noticing are starting to get attention, that are kind of that middle run of artists. And like we've had, I guess unless you know artists, it probably doesn't mean much, but people like Hussey Hicks and 1920 and Minnie Marks to a certain extent, people that are now, like when we went to Blues Fest this time, those artists were massive. And we're like, wow, they came to us when they were that regional touring artist, that middle ground that I'm talking about. And then with the icing on the cake, which has got to be the bigger font on the poster that's going to get people's attention, we have a lovely guy that we've now worked with since about 2012 who negotiates on our behalf. Because if you go straight to an agency and you're someone from Wingham and you're only going to book one gig a year, they're not going to give you a good price. Mm-hmm. So we've built up a really good team at all levels. And just recently, the most amazing support that I'm just so grateful to have is a guy by the name of Ollie, who's the head of Australian Festival Association. And we have phone calls and he sets me up with conversations with people. Like, that's ridiculous. Like,
So were you a groupie way back? Were there bands that you would follow around?
Well, we didn't have to follow bands. They came to us. Like, I absolutely loved seeing Midnight Oil and Richard Clapton and all those bands that people talk about that toured through here. Like, that was on our doorstep every weekend. And then my husband was supporting those people when he wasn't my husband. I didn't even know him. But, so that's been in our history the whole time. And I loved the Aquatic Festival. Like, back when I was a little kid, like, they had, I just remember my mum being amazed because they had Little Paddy or Marty Roan or who's the guy in the sparkly shirt? I don't know. So I used to love watching that stage get set up and hear the music and how, again, seeing how that brought families together and made people so happy. Like, the Aquatic Festival was such a thing.
It was before the time that I was living here, but I only hear positive things about that, how such as a landmark festival for Taree.
It was amazing. So if we can create something that feels like that, that would be amazing. Yeah,
yeah, fantastic. I want to circle back a little bit to for people that might be reflecting on what you talked about with Taree University's campus, and just talk a little bit more before we wrap up about the pathways to education. Would you mind sharing with listeners that are looking to go further, closer to home, what does that look like at Taree University's campus?
Yeah, I think the most important thing to say is that you can study at any age. Like, I think as soon as people think about a university, I think, oh, yeah, that's a decision I'm going to make at the end of year 12. But that's only a small part of what we do. And, in fact, in the first few years, the majority of our students were aged in their 30s. They were the people that had the local job but wanted to be able to get the skills to move up in that local job and move up a level. So back to the pathways bit. Another myth, I think, is that people think that ATAR is the only way to get to uni. You know, year 12, get my ATAR, then I'll go to uni. Glenn Bowman, who's been an incredible careers advisor that we've worked with, said he worked out there's like 44 other ways to get to university besides
It sounds like it would be a great song. Forget about having many reasons to leave your lover. There's 44 ways to get to university.
So,
I love that.
Nobody should ever think that they can't do it, because we've had nurses that have said they dropped out in year 9 and they've now graduated from here, which has been incredible. Because first off, at mature age, over 21, you can apply for your first years at university. And if you struggle with some of those first year subjects, you can do some extra support. You can put it on hold for a bit. If you first start and you think, I can't do this, before census date, you can pull out, change your mind, do anything at no cost, no drama at all. If you've got, I guess, someone that can help you do that, someone to help you do that in the right way. I just think it's so easy to start, and people think it's difficult when it's actually not. And you can, I think I took 9 years to do my 4-year degree. So there doesn't have to be a rush to do it. It can be something that what I really like to promote here is that you can work, earn income and study at the same time. So, you know, you don't have to be giving up one to do the other. Just try to do both at once and just don't, you know, manage your time so you're not taking on too much and burning out. But, and back to pathways, if you're at school and you're feeling like you didn't get the right ATAR or you didn't study the right subjects, there are actual pathway programs that each university offers that will fill you in on those gaps that you didn't do at school. And we found that people that do those foundation courses often will do better in their degree because they might take a year. This is what I should have done, right? If I was talking to me, I should have done foundation pathway for a year, worked out what uni degree I really wanted to do, and then done it, you know, studied online before I got into the complication of buying a house and having kids.
So I guess the take out there is that there are numerous pathways and options that if you're interested, putting a call into Taree University's campus to have an initial conversation, is that a good starting point?
Absolutely.
Rather than thinking, oh, I've got to go and look at what university degrees are offered and what's involved and how much it costs me and get overwhelmed by it, is have a conversation.
Yeah, and even if you don't want to pick up the phone and have a conversation, you can go to our website. There's an express interest button. All we need is your name, first name, last name, and email address. If you've got some vague idea about what you want, put that in, and we'll just start a conversation by email and write back with links of information, then come in and have a chat. You know, there's, again, numerous ways to contact us. It's not, you know, you don't have to come in during business hours or anything. It's not like that.
Yeah. How many students have gone through TUC so far? Do you know?
We've now got 794 that have been registered for support.
Wow.
Have used our support services, if you like.
Yeah. Maybe also talk just a little bit about the actual campus part too, because that was a novel concept to me. I went to university and I've done face to face university, and I've also done online training. So tell me a little bit about that. Share with the listeners the campus, how that goes, operates.
Yeah, so we did want to create a campus, a space that looks like a large university room, I guess. We don't do lectures as such here. For our nurses, we do have debrief sessions where they talk with their facilitator, and there's a group of nursing students that get together and discuss things. But generally, our space is set up for those people that want to come in, sit at a desk, use our laptop or use their own, use our printer to print off all their stuff, use our Wi-Fi to have a Zoom session with for their tutorial. They literally come in, have a space where they can sit and study that's distraction-free is what we try to guarantee. So we try to limit the noise, limit any fuss around them, so that when you come in here, you know, this is your time to sit and study. You're not going to be interrupted. You're not going to feel like you've got to go and put the washing on or think about what you're going to have for dinner tonight. Like, you're here to study in that time. And then if you hit a snag along the way, we're literally just here. You come over and say, I can't work out what this means, or I've got this assessment due next week. I don't know where to start. Or am I studying the right degree? Can I have a chat with Ben, the careers guy? Because I think I've made the wrong choice. So it's all those, I guess it's like a wraparound support. Like, whatever you hit along the way, just have a conversation with us and we can work our way through that with you. Yeah.
Mm. And what's...
The space is beautiful. We've got river views now. And
it is a beautiful space. If anybody hasn't been in there, yes, there's beautiful views of the Manning River. There's lovely artwork in the foyer area that stretches down to where the windows look out to the other side of, is it Fotheringham Park? Is that the one at the end there? It's a very beautiful and inspiring space. Mm-hmm. What's next for TUC?
What's next? A few things. First off, we will be doing a study hub at Gloucester, made possible totally by the Gloucester Business Chamber. They are incredible.
Fantastic.
Fantastically motivated group of people. So that will be happening very soon. So we've recognised, of course, we want to be reaching students or potential students across the whole Mid-Coast LGA. Gloucester to Taree is a stretch. So Gloucester is going to be our next spot where we will add support. There'll be a permanent hub there with swipe-in access, swipe-out access, just like here. We want to have a local Gloucester person be the face of that hub because those local connections are really important. Mm. So that's our next focus. Then we will be, I guess at the same time, we're also looking at what we'll be doing in Foster Tuncurry for the same reason, so that we've got a reach into that area and into those high schools in particular. We'd love to work with Great Lakes Education Fund and see what might happen. So that's happening as an aside. The thing I'm really hanging on this month is we wrote an incredible grant where everybody on the team here collaborated to have put together some thoughts about what could be the best form of us for our next stage. Mm. And we wrote a state grant, which we'll find out about this month. So I won't go into that, but if that happens, there'll be a fantastic foundation of other connections out from the university to build more aspiration into high schools and to have stronger links with employers and, with the Biripi community as well.
We'll keep our fingers and toes crossed for you, the team. If someone's considering, I guess we've talked about that, but studying at TUC, what do you think are the biggest barriers that you could share with them to say, if that's what you're thinking, it's okay, we can help you get through that?
I think they might believe that they're not capable of studying. And if that's the case, you've just got to, I guess, pick your entry level as to where, you know, pick the entry level to your study that aligns with your capability. So that's different for every person, but at least have that conversation and we can connect you in various different ways. And I guess don't wait either till the end of year 12 if you're a student. We are supporting, like just here today, we've got the students from Camden Haven High School and they support students that are studying online through high school. So even if there's some units of study that you can't get to do through the high school that you're at, don't forget that there's online options there too, to choose particular lines of study that might be what you've got in mind for your future career. Other barriers might be around the cost of study or the cost of, you know, I haven't got a laptop, I can't afford my textbooks. We've got scholarships to help out with that. We've got IT here that you can use anyway. Certainly if there's financial stress on people, we've got scholarships that we can access to support students that are really dedicated in their study. We can make that happen. So I guess cost can often feel like a barrier, the capability of not knowing where you're at, and just the confidence, like maybe you feel like it's difficult to walk into this place, just come along to one of the events we have or something and start to get a feel for the place. And I think we're pretty approachable. Like you can really waltz in here anytime and ask for a drink of water or something and that can start the conversation. I think if we can help people with their confidence and meet their level of capabilities that they're currently at and remove any of those costs that they might fear or associated with study, we can talk through all of those. There's options around all of that to address any of those fears.
Yeah, so don't let the fears hold you back. We'll be able to help you find a way forward with that. Yeah. What keeps you motivated, Donna? Like I think you must. I sometimes say there's. I think there's at least four of you, for the amount of work one person gets done. What is it that keeps you pushing in that way?
I can't stand to never give 100%. Like the worst thing, if someone said to me, "I think you're a bit lazy," that would cut me to the core.
I don't think there's any risk of anybody saying that about Donna Ballard.
I guess I will always want to be seen to be someone that can get things done, and that if there's a roadblock to something, then help me get, like, I'll help you get through it. Like, I kind of like to see it. No, I don't like to see a difficulty, but if there is a difficulty, I don't let that deter me. Like, I like to, because once you're through that difficulty, that can be the most amazing feeling.
Yeah.
So I don't know what motivates me. I don't know.
What I'm hearing there is, to some degree, it's actually you get the buzz out of solving the problem.
Yeah.
You know, that what I heard there is that can be getting through the difficult part. That can be the really exciting part. So it's almost like, you know, when you're addicted to chilies and you just keep eating hotter chilies and just to get the feel of the chilies, right? It's actually the achievement and not in an ego sense, but in a contribution and a collaboration sense.
And I'm just thinking too, like, one thing I really, really want to do is build pride in this area. Like, that's what started with the festival, I guess. Let's put something good on so people know that, oh, there's something, you know, oh, I've heard there's something good in that area I might go and visit. Like, if Wingham could get a lift out of having a music festival, well, let's do that. Like, I want to build positivity. I want Taree to have a good narrative around it of, you know what, that's a culture of learning there. You can actually be educated. We can increase economic development. We can make organisations want to come back here. Like, I worked here in Taree when that manufacturing boom they talk about was on, and it was buzzing and it was great. So I guess I'm kind of hanging on to that and going, can we make that happen again? I just want to have positivity around us, and so the community can feel pride and connected. That's what keeps me going. Yeah.
And is this, which is such a beautiful aspiration, and we're so appreciative of you and others that have that same sentiment and intent towards living and participating here. Is there a word or two that you'd use to sum up the spirit of our region?
I just think it's full of opportunity that hasn't been embraced.
I think that's
that sounds a bit negative, but
no, I think that's great. I think for me personally, I would say the same. I think that there is. You know, you can always look back and say, oh, the aquatic festival or the manufacturing boom, but, you know, we can always make it that our best days are still ahead.
I think there are still great things happening. I'm not saying that they were peaks of, because there were certainly other negative things happening in town when I was growing up through those same years. So it's not like everything was rosy. And there'll always be different strands in society happening, but it's a beautiful place to be. Like, this area is beautiful.
Yeah, I was walking, minding a mate's dog right now, and so I was down walking on the beach this morning, and everybody I spoke to just had this big grin. They were just loving it. There's just this, you know, mix of positivity, sort of almost all that it was, because it was a cracking good day and the sun was shining, and it was just, how good is this? You know, which is a lovely, lovely energy to be in, and to look to build a community that is fueled by that positivity and pride is a great aspiration. Donna, where can people find out more about TUC and the Wingham Music Festival?
For Taree University's campus, if you Google Taree Uni, that will usually pop up, but our website is www.tareeuni.org.au.
Great. And what about the Wingham Festival? When are we going to know what's happening? Who's lined up? When can you reveal?
Oh, I can't reveal too much yet.
When are you anticipating having the program?
This month. Oh, this is a big month all round for all aspects of my life. So the festival is always the third weekend in October. We've already sold a stack of tickets last year when we were on sale for a short period coming into Christmas, which was really exciting.
Great.
People are contacting us now to say winning a ticket's up. We hope to have tickets up by the end of this month as well. So, yeah, it's always the third weekend in October, and, yeah, we're planning towards the one this year with everything under wraps at this stage.
Okay, well, you heard it here first, folks. there'll be links to those sites in the show notes. Donna, it's been an absolute delight to hang out with you for the afternoon, and thanks for having a convo with me and sharing your authentic story. Any last comments from your side in terms of, I guess, what you'd want listeners to take from what you shared today?
I guess that I never, ever, ever, ever feel like I'm doing anything in isolation on my own. Like, I'm not really an individual operator. My family are amazing. I've mentioned the team at the festival that make things happen. And my team here at work at PUC are incredible. So I don't want anyone to go away and think, wow, Donna Ballard, she does it all. I absolutely do not. Like, there's always incredible people that make it happen. I just work with those people. Yeah.
You've always said that when I've emailed you and said, what, is there actually four of you? You've always said, I've got a great team of people, and we don't do anything in isolation that's of meaning, really. So that's a great takeout. Thank you again. Thank you to our listeners. Stay tuned for more episodes where we'll be looking to have conversations with other locals, to have conversations and stories that connect. So we'll catch you next time. Thanks, Donna.
Thanks, Megan.
You've been listening to Convos, the Lifestyle Barrington Coast podcast. If you love this chat, make sure to hit that subscribe button so you don't miss a single episode. And if you know somebody we should be talking to on Convos, hit us up on our Facebook page, Lifestyle Barrington Coast.